It's not about the past. It's about knowing your history so you can fight in the present. Otherwise, you don't know who the real enemy is, what the real issue is, because it had been covered by many layers of bad information, of lies, and manipulation. And this week's opening quote comes from Raoul Peck. Welcome to Surviving the Matrix, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Maxwell Egan. It's a pleasure to be with you once again, and I will be your host for the next hour. And what an interesting week this has been, ladies and gentlemen. The bombshell that was dropped by Amy Robach from the ABC when she was filmed off-air and someone leaked it and put it on the internet when she was saying how they had all the dirt on Jeffrey Epstein 3 years ago. And at the ABC and elements within Buckingham Palace squashed the story. Incredible to see that information get out there, and it went viral. 2 million views in 24 hours. Great stuff. And seriously, good on Project Veritas for publishing that video. I'm sure there was a lot of people who really didn't want it published. So it seems that the Epstein case is not going to die quite yet, and that's a good thing. And 10 points to Luke Radowski from We Are Change and Jeff Berwick, the dollar vigilante, for sneaking onto Jeffrey Epstein's island as well. God, I wish I'd been in the area for that one, folks. That would have been great fun. But 10 points for them for doing so. So great to see that information getting out there and the media having no choice but to pick up on this story and continue rummaging through it. And I think we're going to see a lot more heads roll in the future. I really do. I think that this is still going to come back to haunt quite a number of people, this story. But moving on from that, we are certainly facing a lot of challenges in the world today, ladies and gentlemen. We're facing an assault from all quarters and even from the people we are attempting to save, you know, as has always been the case. But it's a interesting thing now to see how so many people who are pushing for freedom and pushing for some type of real change, so many really positive people who want to do good in the world have been corralled and hijacked and tricked into supporting things such as the Extinction Rebellion movement, which of course is a complete New World Order, United Nations scam, which is all about controlling nations economically even further and selling off nations even further and ushering in the smart grid on top of it and getting the kids to support it under the mistaken concept that they're actually supporting the environment and supporting human freedom when they're actually supporting exactly the opposite. It's quite freaky to see. But what has happened is that people have basically been mobilized against themselves. People have been mobilized against freedom and against the truth movement, against the truth and freedom movement under the guise of protecting the environment. Like I said, they're doing exactly the opposite, and it's really, really a complicated issue because, like I said, there's so many levels to this. I mean, it really is a very complicated oyster to open, a very complicated onion to peel. And that's why attempting to get the truth to people is such a difficult thing to do. As I've said so many times, you know, once you begin going down the rabbit hole, I mean, there's just so much information to look at that when people express some type of interest in what we're telling them, we've got to be careful that we don't turn on a fire hose and drown them in information. We've simply got to give people enough to spark that interest, enough to crack that shell, enough to help them notice the obvious of what's actually going on around them. And there's actually more and more people doing that, folks. I've actually been getting a lot of feedback from people lately. I've been getting a lot of emails from people. A lot of activism on the ground seems to be happening here in Australia. A lot of people are finally waking up to the fact that something's terribly wrong because the government's been pushing so much in the last 10 years that it's really gotten to the point that now even an average man on the street is starting to question what's going on and starting to question just why they're struggling, just why some of this legislation that's been forced on them is really being pushed on them as well. I mean, and a lot of people are beginning to realize that something is terribly wrong with the way this country is being run, and they're standing up and wanting to do something about it, and that's a good thing. It's a good thing to see. But of course, the question is, what do they do about it exactly? And as I've said so often, as I've been saying since 2008, since I first came on air, the solution to the problem is putting unity back into the community and standing up as one community together to face the problem and to address the problem head on. No good beating around the bush, and there's no good attempting to put band-aids on symptoms. What we need to do is face the root core of the problem, which is rampant corruption throughout the entire mechanism. It's systemic. There's nothing we can do about it by addressing symptoms. We have to acknowledge the fact that the entire system is corrupt. And the only real way we're going to have any positive effect in doing this is to create some type of groundswell, some type of common unity within the community. I mean, if we can get this amount of unity in people who are speaking out against anthropogenic climate change when it's actually a fiction, if we can get these people to wake up to the fact that they've been scammed and to address the root core of the problem, which is in fact systemic corruption and rampant lies from government and industry and the banking system and the whole mechanism, well, perhaps we can create some sort of a groundswell. Perhaps we can bring about some sort of change. But at the moment, what the Extinction Rebellion movement is actually doing is it is pushing the economic model over everything, and it is pushing towards having the smart grid rolled out under the pretext of saving the environment, when what it's actually going to do is create an enormous amount of damage in the environment, an enormous amount of damage to life itself, an enormous amount of damage to the human experience, and it's going to usher in a smart prison, a smart slavery system that it will be almost impossible to escape from. Now, these people simply don't realize what they are doing, but there is a huge force that has been mobilized in these people. So if we could find some way of cracking the shell in many of these kids that are involved in Extinction Rebellion, perhaps that would be a formidable force that we could use to turn the ship of state around. The question again is, of course, how do we do that? And we need to be really careful in all the actions that we take against our government as well. I mean, I speak out against the government all the time because of this systemic corruption. But by the same token, I don't wish to see any type of civil war or any type of overthrow of the government. I'd like to see the people simply down tools in unity and refuse to comply with their own slavery and replace the politicians with something a little bit more human and lead us back to a point that we don't need government. But we've got to be very careful that we don't simply create a situation where there is so much civil unrest that it erupts into violence, because if we do that, we are playing directly into their hands. And this is the same in all countries, folks. And when you look at the destabilization that's happening in all of our countries, there's a good reason for this. Because if this happens, if there was something like, you know, a huge rebellion here in Australia or in the United States or anything, and it was to erupt into any type of violence against the government or civil war against the government, what you'll find is that the response will be for the system to send in UN peacekeepers into your country to keep the peace. Oh yeah, we'll just send a neutral force in there to keep the peace, because obviously you don't want to trust your own politicians, you don't want to trust your own military, you don't want to trust your own police, so we'll send an international force in there to take care of you. And what this will be an invading force. You know, if you were to have civil war break out in America, what you will be greeted with is a force of Chinese soldiers with UN hats on who will come there and they will basically take over the country for China, because China already owns most of the US anyway. And that's what they'll do here in Australia as well. That's what they'll do in Europe as well. They'll send in forces from other countries. You know, if you're in France and there's civil unrest and they send in a force of UN peacekeepers, you guarantee these people will be from Turkey or China or Ukraine or somewhere completely different to France. And this peacekeeping force will be full of people who don't care about shooting French people at all. See, you're not going to have soldiers that want to kill their own countrymen. You're not going to have Australian soldiers and American soldiers that are going to want to open fire on their own people. But if Australian soldiers are sent to Timor to look after the situation there, and Chinese soldiers are sent to Australia to look after the situation here, then it's going to be very, very different, because these people are not going to give two hoots about firing on Australian citizens or American citizens, because they're not their countrymen. They don't care. They're simply there to do a job, and they don't care what that job is as long as they get the paycheck at the end of the day. You see, that's the thing about UN soldiers, folks. Think about it. I mean, UN soldiers, if you're a soldier and you're fighting for the UN, you're not fighting for your country. You're fighting for a foreign power for a paycheck. So the UN soldiers are essentially a mercenary force. It's a mercenary army, an international mercenary force controlled by an international group of power brokers and robber barons who are using it to inflict themselves upon the rest of the world. And that's the danger that we face, folks. The UN is the New World Order force, and as I said, it's a mercenary army. And this is what will be sent to all of our shores should we push things in the wrong direction, or push too hard, or just make the wrong move. So we've got to be very, very careful about how we play things, and we've really got to look at what this truth movement is doing and what it's promoting as well. We've got to be very, very careful of the ground in which we're treading and the path that we are laying out. We've really got to look at things sensibly and look at the bigger picture in all that we do when dealing with this situation, folks. Otherwise, we're not going to get anywhere. We're just going to lead ourselves into our own prison, and that's the last thing we want to do. And the real concern with all of this, of course, is the smart grid that is coming on top of all of this, the smart grid that is going to be used to control all of us, and the social crediting system that is going with it. The social crediting system that they've already started to trial here in Darwin, Australia, and that is already in full swing in China. And when you tie this in with the Chinese One Belt, One Road trade system that is coming online, you can see where all this is going, folks. And one of the big plans that they need to do, of course, is to collapse the US economy, to remove the United States' place as the global reserve currency. This is something that I talked about a couple of years ago, and something that is still very much ongoing. And I would suggest that what they intend to replace it with is a worldwide cryptocurrency. That's the way it's going to go. And the smart grid really is the major factor in all of this. The smart grid is what is being used to control everybody. And as I mentioned recently, remember I said to you, pretty soon they're going to be putting your license on your phone. And this will give the police access to your phone whenever they pull you over. They can pull you over for speeding or any type of a roadside checkup and get access to your phone simply by putting your license on your phone. This is something that I said they were going to do about a year ago. I started mentioning this, and it's just started now. We've seen new messages that are being sent out to people in New South Wales here in Australia offering you the choice to get your license downloaded directly onto your phone, and so much more convenient. And guess what? It's free to do it this way as well. So this is the way they are leading us, folks. They want your license on your phone. You see, a police officer, if they pull you over on the side of the road or just pull you over for any reason at all, they can ask to see ID, and you have to show them ID upon demand, you know, license or student ID card or whatever it is. But they can't just ask you for your phone. They can't just search your phone if they pull you over on the side of the road or stop to ask you questions on the street or stop to ask for ID or anything like that. They can't just demand to search your phone. But if they put your ID on your phone, then they don't have to ask to search your phone. All they have to do is ask for your ID and then say, we're just going to run over here and do a check on you. And what they will do is punch a code into your phone and get your whole social profile up and your entire social credit report up, and they'll know everything about you, everybody you talk to, everything you've done, all because you have put your identification on your phone. And they're offering you this choice now, ladies and gentlemen. And it's a choice at the moment, but soon it will be mandatory. Soon there won't be a choice. Soon it will be the only option you have. When you want to get your driver's license, that'll be the only option, folks. You'll have to download it onto your smartphone. That'll be interesting for me when that happens, because I won't be doing that because I don't use smartphones. I'll simply be getting them to supply me with the receipt to show that I've paid for my license, and then I'll just carry that receipt around with me. If a police officer ever asks to see my license, I'll just hand him the receipt to show them that I've paid for it and tell him that I'm still waiting for it to arrive in the mail. But I can tell you right now that this is the way they want to take it. And as I said, folks, it gives the police the opportunity to be able to search your phone. And all they have to do is get their hands on your phone, and that's it. They can just punch in a code, get your entire social profile up, look at what your social credit points are, and decide whether you are a person of interest that they should take in for questioning or not, right there on the spot, simply because they've got access to your phone, because you've been tricked into putting your license on your phone. So you need to alert people to what is going on here and discourage anybody from getting their license on their phone, ladies and gentlemen. This is a very, very bad place to be going. But like I said, folks, it's coming from all angles, just the legislation, the laws, everything they're doing. Now, the new Fixated Persons Act that they have enacted here in Australia. You can now be classed as a fixated person if you do things like write to politicians too many times about a particular issue. Let's say 5G is a concern for you, and you write to your politician about it, and they don't respond to you, so you write again, and this continues, and you end up writing 5 or 6 letters to your politician. If you do that, you can now be classed as a fixated person, and you can be arrested and taken off for psychiatric evaluation. And they can do this, folks, by simply not responding to your letters. That's what they do. They just don't respond, so that you have to keep asking, and then you're suddenly fixated, and they can take legal action against you. And the Australian Mental Health Act, the Australian Mental Health Services, is basically a system of organized abuse of population. It's a system whereby you can just take anybody off the street, disappear people's children, take parents, do whatever you want, by simply claiming it's all under the Mental Health Act. I've recently been contacted by a family, actually, whose young son suffers from narcolepsy. He's a 19-year-old. They found that by smoking cannabis, his symptoms completely disappeared. And they told their doctors of this miraculous achievement by simply using weed. The doctor sent them to a specialist. The specialist recommended the child be put on psychotropic drugs and come in for an evaluation. The parents said, "We don't think this is a good idea." And the result was that the child has been taken from the parents, locked into a psychiatric ward, been forced to take psychotropic drugs, and the parents have no say. The child has no say. The state has simply done this under the disgusting human abuse system that is masquerading as the Australian Mental Health Act. And think about that, folks. I mean, they've literally kidnapped this 19-year-old child. And this is right here in Brisbane, Australia, being done by the police, the sworn protectors of society. They've kidnapped this child. They've taken him to a psychiatric ward. They have him locked up in a psych ward, white walls, wearing hospital clothes, being fed on psychotropic drugs, when all he has to do is smoke some cannabis and his symptoms disappear completely. This is torture. This is legalized torture of a young person by an utterly corrupt criminal government that does not give a shit about the people. That's what we're facing here in this country, folks. Scott Morrison is such a dipshit. He is literally such a toxic psychopath that he would allow this sort of stuff to go on in this country. And the rest of the stuff that he's doing, folks, like I said, selling all of our water off overseas. He's doing all sorts of terrible things, this man. And just think about that for a moment and let it really sink in, folks. If you're an Australian, let that sink in. Scott Morrison is selling our water. They are draining the Great Artesian Basin, pumping out thousands upon thousands of gallons of water from the Great Artesian Basin, and they are selling it to China. And as I said, folks, let that sink in. This is a desert nation. We have such a small amount of water on this country and in this country. We have such a small area that can be populated in this country due to the lack of water in this country. Most of this country is a desert. And we have a Prime Minister who is so up himself, so up foreign interests, has his head so far up UN asshole that he is selling our water to China. He does not give a damn about the people of this country. He is literally hanging us out to dry, and to dry, literally, folks. We are going to have no water left in this country if this toxic dipshit is not taken out of office and sent somewhere very dark and very deep with very thick bars on the walls and windows. That's the situation we're facing, folks. We have a criminal cabal that has taken over this country and is destroying this country and is hanging this country's people out to dry. Scott Morrison does not serve the people of this country. He serves foreign interests, and all you've got to do to confirm that fact is look at his actions. And it's about time the people of Australia stood up and made a little bit of noise while we still have the opportunity to do so, folks, because they're bringing out all this sort of legislation all the time. Now, they've enacted so many incredibly repressive laws in the last 10 years since the 9/11 attacks were staged. And fortunately, a lot of people are beginning to notice it, but this is what's happening, folks. This type of legislation is being rolled out in every state, and it's happening almost every day. So this is how bad it's become in this country, folks. And I would suggest the politicians should be subject to these types of legislation as well. I mean, for example, the local politician here, even perhaps the CEO of Telstra, who is pushing for 5G to come out. I mean, we've already told them that we don't want these 5G towers, yet they seem to be intent on pushing these 5G towers out anyway, no matter how much we told them we don't want them. It would appear that local politicians, perhaps a local telco, are fixated on putting this 5G system in place. So perhaps we need to take them off for psychiatric evaluation under the new fixated persons legislation. The government also seems pretty fixated on selling all of our water to China, draining the Great Artesian Basin, destroying the Murray-Darling Basin, and selling off all of Australia's water to foreign interests. They also seem fixated on rolling out 5G themselves. They seem fixated on supporting this corrupt banking system, so perhaps all of the politicians in this country should be taken off for psychiatric evaluation under the Fixated Persons Act as well. I mean, that's the reality of the situation, folks. These people are terminally demented, and they're just going to keep pushing and keep rolling out whatever legislation they can until we start pushing back. And it's about time we face that fact, and we started to push back a little bit, folks, because that's how far the politicians will push. They will push as far as we let them push. And we just seem to continue to be letting them push without pushing back at all, and I think it's high time we did, because if we don't, we are heading for a very, very bad situation, folks. You know, and like I've said so many times, you know, I'd love to be coming onto these shows and giving you some positive information, but what can I do in the face of what is unfolding? You know, because this earth, the people on this earth, are heading for a genocide of massive proportions. I mean, we really are. There's going to be so many people culled in the coming few years, folks. And I don't think people really realize what is coming. And you try to alert people to the fact that we could actually change all this if they were to simply unify as one community and stand up and call this out for what it is. Now, we could change it very simply, but they won't do that. You try to tell them this, and they tell you that you're a fearmonger. You're spreading fear. You're doing all this stuff. You're trying to lead the human race into a dark place by raising the fear vibration and all this rubbish that they talk about. People don't understand what fear is, they don't understand what love is, and they don't understand their own personal power and how easy it could be for us to simply change things. You know, we really don't have to do anything. We don't even need an armed revolution, folks. All we need to do is to step into our moral compass and to connect with the people around us and stand up and say no. It's really that simple. You know, it seems like it would be far more difficult than that, but no, it's really that simple. Now, this is something that I've been sharing for many years, as soon as I came on the air, right from the very first show. But the problem is that we just can't seem to unify the people. There was a wave building back in 2014, but then people's belief systems got in the way, and that's basically what the resistance has become. A whole bunch of squabbling fools arguing over their belief systems, and nobody seems to see the importance of getting some sort of unified focus, and nobody seems to really want to take opportunities that arise that may actually lead to freedom. A lot of people are quite happy to put out videos and criticize the government and do all these things, but they're not actually prepared to step into action when opportunities do present themselves to us. This is what we saw with Christchurch. That was such an opportunity for us. We didn't have to debate whether it was real or fake or anything. All we had to do was ask the question, look at the video, and ask the government the question, well, if it's a lone gunman, like you say, then who are these guys on the video? Who are these guys standing around in red? Who are these people leaving halfway through? We had it all there on the video, but unfortunately, most people I've found in the so-called truth movement, especially those on YouTube with monetized accounts, are simply more concerned about their subscribers and their income than actually getting the truth out to people. Now, to be quite honest about it, many of them are simply cowards who want to sit there and criticize other people, but they're not prepared to actually jump into action in the real world. And if people aren't prepared to do that, then we're not going to get anywhere, because that is the only way we are going to get somewhere, folks, is we have to get into action and be prepared to apply all these spiritual understandings we have to the real world. You know, as I've alluded to on the show so many times, the real answer to escaping this system lies in love. The problem is that many people do not understand what love is, because, I mean, I can say this and people think, oh, this is just this warm, fuzzy, new age thing that you're doing. It's not going to change anything. But people, as I said, do not understand what love is. People have this concept that love is this warm, fuzzy thing, or it's something sexual or whatever. But really, if you look at reality, if you look at this being an energetic universe, a universe where all is made of energy, everything comes from the very same energetic source, ultimately. If you break everything down to its component parts, all you get is photon light and phonon sound. That is it. It's energy. The entire universe is energy. It's all electrical. So if you think about this universe as having two polarities, the polarity of positive and negative, the polarity of good and bad, the polarity of black and white, whatever the two extremes are that you want to use to put it in to be able to understand it, if you can think of it as an emotional expression and think of reality as emotionally based, then the two spectrums of that energy, the two polarities of that energy, are the energies of love and fear. So you think about that one. What is love? Love is simply not fear. So if you're in a state of fear about any aspect of your life, then how are you in a state of love? You might be in love for life. You might love life. You might love people, love animals, love all sorts of things. But if you're in a state of fear in any aspect of your life, how are you in a state of love? You're not. And the thing is, this system is all based in fear. It's a system of fear and scarcity and trauma-based mind control. That's what this system is. That's what it's always been. And if you can think of love, if you were living in a universe that was just love, that was the only energy that existed, as soon as you experience something outside that, something like fear, you wouldn't even have a name for it. All you would know was that it was not love. So you could actually even change the name fear, change the word fear to the word not love, as one word, not love. And you could change the word love to being not fear. So, as I was saying, you may be in this state of spirituality and love and light and all this stuff that people say, but if you're afraid to look at the shadow around you, then how are you actually in a state of love? You're not. You're in a state of fear. You're in a state of denial of the shadow that exists, which is what is perpetuating the shadow, and you're in a state of fear of facing it. So you're actually in the exact opposite of the expression that you're claiming to be in by simply refusing to look at the shadow, by refusing to shine any light on the shadow. Now, if people were to actually do that, as I keep saying, folks, we could quite literally change the world in a day. And I'll continue with this a little bit more after the break, but I think we have reached break time now, so I'll leave it there for now. We'll go have a break. Thank you for joining me on the air today. It's always a pleasure to have your company, and I'll be back to speak to you again in a few minutes. Don't go away, because I've got plenty more to come. And welcome back to the show, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah, so something that I've found, that I've encountered a great deal in my life in attempting to share this type of a message with people, especially in the areas that I've lived in, such as Byron Bay here in Australia, which has really got to be the world capital of spiritual narcissism, it really has. What I've encountered so often in these situations is the love and light people. The people who refuse to look at the shadow, they will commonly sprout the same narrative that where attention goes, energy flows. The darkness is not part of my reality. By looking at it, I'm manifesting it, and so I'll refuse to look at it. And there is just so much wrong with this statement that it beggars belief that people cling onto it as a means to disguise their own personal fears, because essentially that's what they're doing. And to really understand this, and I know I've gone through this on previous shows, I'm not sure how long ago it was, so I'm going to go through it again because I think it needs to be made apparent to people and just for anybody who might have missed it. But to understand how this works, you really need to understand the true nature of light. What is light? And essentially, light is information. And to illustrate this point, say, for example, you were to walk into a dark room, complete blackness, you don't know what's in there, you're just walking into this room, and there you are. You have no information about the room. But as soon as you strike a candle, or strike a match, or light a light, you can suddenly see where you are, because the light has given you that information. It's given you information about the room. Light is simply information. information is light. People who step onto the path of enlightenment often don't realize what the path is that they're stepping onto. They very often think that this path of enlightenment will lead them to a place where they will eventually climb the mountain looking for the blue rose or whatever, and they'll sit atop of the mountain in robes and all their chakras will be open. They'll be glowing, an all-knowing, all-wise, all-seeing being. And that is not what enlightenment is. That place that you're looking for is called Ixalan, and it is a place that doesn't exist. Well, it doesn't exist in a form that most people believe or conceive that it exists anyway, inasmuch as the place you are looking for is not a destination, it is in fact the path itself. The journey is the place. The place that you're looking for is the journey that you're on. The journey is the place. And unfortunately, most people are missing out on that place because they are not allowing themselves to access the information that becomes available, the light that becomes available to them along the path, along the way. And what they don't perceive on their path to enlightenment is that that path to enlightenment is the journey that they are on. The journey is called life, and they are on the path already by default as soon as they are born and they enter this realm. They don't need to talk to gurus to discover the truth. They don't need to do courses or do any vipassanas or any of this sort of stuff. They just need to realize what the journey is and be open to the information that is streaming into their lives every day by default. They just don't see the simplicity of how it actually works. You know, people want to become enlightened, and so they find a guru, and the guru will very often only give them access to certain information and tell them to ignore other information, ignore all the negative stuff. Just focus on that which makes you feel good, that which reinforces your belief system. And they step onto these paths looking for spiritual enlightenment, and they allow themselves to be led all these places which don't really lead anywhere. They never lead them to themselves, and they all distract them from the actual journey that they're on, simply because they haven't ever really realized the basic truth, that the only real truth they will ever discover and ever know is themselves, and that light is information and information is light. And people who do choose to step onto the path of enlightenment, or at least become aware that that is the path that they are on already by default, and simply become observers of that path, soon discover that true enlightenment is nothing what anybody perceives it to be when they make the conscious choice to actually step onto the path. Because true enlightenment is a respect and an ability to process all forms of light. And true enlightenment is the filling of your soul with information. It is a very uncomfortable and very destructive process, because it is a breaking down of everything you thought was true and a complete tearing away of the veil that covers reality. And what we have with people refusing to look at information that they perceive to be negative and somehow interrupts their chi or whatever is a failure or an inability of certain people to be able to process certain forms of light. And that's what we have. People who won't look at the shadow, people who won't acknowledge the corruption in the world, simply are incapable of processing certain forms of light, and that is what is perpetuating the darkness. And when you look at the whole concept of where attention goes, energy flows. If you really look deeper at it, what you find is that people are giving energy to the darkness every day. They're giving attention to it every day. Every time they use their credit card, every time they walk between the lines, every time they ask permission for something, every time they pay their taxes, every time they work their job, every time they turn a blind eye to the hardship of somebody else that is in a state of hardship due to the system, every time they give any attention to this system at all and comply with any regulations that's given them at all, they are giving energy to the system. And when they feel that they're living in a state of love by simply refusing to acknowledge the darkness, what they're actually doing, as I mentioned previously, is they are living in a state of fear, due to their failure to be able to process certain forms of light. And so what you find, you know, if you are a person who believes in energy and believes in the energy fields we radiate and wants to be aware of what energy you're radiating, you know, this whole New Age concept of that's what's going on. Well, if that's the sort of mindset that you have, then you've got to be aware that by refusing to look at the shadow, your main energy that you are focused in is fear, and you're simply in denial of that fact. But it's true. I mean, that's what you're doing by refusing to look at this stuff. So what is the true intention and true deeper energy that you are radiating from that stance that you've adopted? Because ultimately, if you're prepared to be honest about it and really look at things, it's fear. And you think about it, folks. What is to fear? Yeah, ultimately, what it all comes down to, like I said, I mean, this whole system is based in fear. It's a system of fear, scarcity, and trauma-based mind control. That's what this whole system is. And ultimately, it comes down to a fear of death. Most people are terrified of death. We're taught to be afraid of death. We have ceremonies for death. We have funerals. We have grievances when people die. All sorts of stuff we have to make sure we're in fear, kept in fear, of the one part of life which is inevitable. And most of the time when people respect authorities because they're in fear of the reprisals that might happen should they stand up against authority, they'll allow the most evil deeds to be done in front of them and keep their head down as long as they're okay. They'll tolerate evil as long as they're okay. And what if that is what the test is all about? You know, people are so afraid of death, and yet death is the only part of life which is inevitable, and we go through life keeping our head down, tolerating evil around us, somehow thinking it's going to help us avoid death at some stage. But ultimately, it's not going to do that, folks. And as I've said before, what if that's really what it's about? What if that's why evil exists? It exists in order to give you the choice of just how much you are willing to comply with evil in order to avoid the one part of life which is inevitable that you're going to have to go through anyway. And what if when you go through that path, when you cross that threshold, that's the first question. How much evil did you tolerate? You know, whoever's on the pearly gates might look at you up and down and think, well, okay, you've lived a long life and you certainly got a lot of stuff along the way, so it seems that you actually tolerated quite a bit of evil. Interesting concept, isn't it? Perhaps that's where they get the saying that a rich man has as much chance of entering heaven as a camel does of being squeezed through the eye of a needle. I mean, who knows? Perhaps that's where they get the saying, only the good die young. I mean, it's kind of an interesting and an esoteric topic to discuss, you know, an interesting conversation to have. I mean, it's, you know, an esoteric sort of a conversation. It's difficult to find answers to these conversations. All you can really do is speculate. But by the same token, I think it's an important conversation to have. You know, it's an important avenue to explore. I really do. You know, I think there's a lot more to this life than what people believe that there is. I think most of it is about what happens after this life, or I would suggest it is anyway, and that's why I think it's important that you can't really have a stake in the outcome of so many of the actions that we go through, so many of the goals that we think we need to achieve in this life, which are not goals that have anything to do with consciousness, not goals that have anything to do with us really. Usually it's about collecting more piles of stuff or whatever. Nothing we can take with us, nothing that really means anything, nothing that helps us discover ourselves. So I think it's important to look at this. I mean, the human life is an interesting experience, folks. There's got to be more to it than this simple flash in the pan that we have. It's a very short experience. I mean, I remember when I was a child just the other day. It seems very, very recent. And even when you look at calendars, look at the Mayan calendar, things such as the Zolkin and the Kin, when you put these two calendars together, it takes you through the days. It suggests that there are about 10 aspects to every day of creation. And it takes 52 years before you've gone through and experienced every aspect of every day of creation. And therefore, it takes 52 years for you to become an elder, to become an adult, according to the Mayan way of life. And that's an interesting thing as well. It would suggest that there's far more years we should be living. We shouldn't be popping off around 70 or 80 or 100 years old the way we do. If you look at biblical tales, people live to, you know, 300, 400, 500 years old. So there's no reason to think that this isn't the norm and that something has been done to reduce our lifespan very dramatically. In fact, I would suggest it has. And it's even been taken to ridiculous degrees lately, like psychologically they've reduced it even more by the exaltation of youth. You know, because when you think about it, you know, like, children grow up and they don't really become accepted as adults in our society till they're like 18 or 21. And yet they're told that by the time you're 30, you're over the hill. So you basically get 10 years of valuable life, 10 years where you can actually get out there and make a difference, 10 years where you're viewed as someone who's worthwhile and respectable, someone who is a vibrant force in the community or whatever, you know. After that, you become a middle-aged person, and after that, you become a senior citizen. So psychologically, they've taken our life from us as well by the exaltation of youth and by only giving you those 10 years. You know, you get kids that can't wait to be adults so they can go out and do these things, and they want to do all these things and get everything done and get all of life experience by the time they're 30 because they're terrified that by the time they get their first wrinkle, it's all over. And they're not even adults yet at this stage. You know, we get people, kids, to go out and become business people and go out and form companies and do all these things when they haven't even really grown up yet because they haven't experienced every day of creation yet. So they have no real idea of how reality works. They're just trying to think economically and think that's what it's all about. So it's kind of an interesting thing, you know. We've been brutalized in so many ways, ladies and gentlemen. We've had everything that it means to be human taken from us in so many ways. We've been enslaved to time, and we've been given such small amounts of time with which to respect ourselves and with which to do anything. As I was saying, we get that 10 years from when you're 20 to 30, and that's it. But before that and after that, it's all downhill. And this is a program, and it totally disconnects people from what it means to be human. It totally disconnects people from the path of life itself. You know, they don't see what it is. They don't see the journey that they're on. They're looking for this thing that's going to happen when they turn 18 or 21 or whatever. And then they're afraid of what's going to happen once they get to 30. So they're living in fear at that point. They're dying to get there and really happy once they do get there. But as soon as they start treading down that path, then, you know, the first couple of years of it is usually immersed in the ego that you get when you've just become an adult and accepted by society, you know, at 21 years old or whatever. And then it soon quickly begins to decay as 30 starts to approach. And as I said, it all goes downhill from there. You know, people are taught to get all sorts of prosthetics and all sorts of things and all sorts of enhancements, all sorts of things done to themselves to hide the fact that they're starting to get wrinkles, hide the fact that they're actually beginning to grow up is the thing, you know. People seem to be terrified of actually growing up, terrified of actually becoming anything that isn't this beautiful young look that is so accepted by society, and they're terrified of not achieving all these goals that they really don't need to achieve. You know, all these goals and all these parameters that have been given to them by society that they think are successful, you know, they will be successful once they've reached these points. All these milestones and all these things that are generally unachievable. And people are so fixated on youth and beauty that you'll even get beautiful people who will take photos of themselves and then Photoshop them in Photoshop and fix themselves up and change themselves before they post them on Instagram because they're not happy with the way they look. They want to look even more beautiful than what they are. And they simply turn themselves into something unrealistic and then wonder why they don't like looking in the mirror. And it's a crazy psychology that's been put over us, folks, and all of it is disconnecting us from what it means to be human. All of it is causing people to really lose track of their lives and not experience the truth of their lives, not experience their lives for what they really should be. It's a very sad thing to see, but it's so prevalent in our society. You know, we have a society that's been created for us which is so incredibly competitive, and it's got to the point that it's now competitive in looks as well, competitive in beauty. Even amongst the beautiful people, they're competitive in this, and none of it means anything, folks. It's not supposed to be that way. We need to be more cooperative and not so competitive, you know, and we need some unity. That's the only thing that's going to change things. You know, I know I've probably gone off on a whole bunch of tangents on the show today as well. I mean, it's just difficult to find a way out of this mess without looking at everything from all these angles and looking at this. I mean, because ultimately, you know, if you want to find a way out of this mess, it's got to come down to people doing the inner work and changing the inner self, but being prepared to apply that to the 3D world they live in. Yeah, so you've got to look at all these aspects and look at all these avenues and find what it is that's going to break down that barrier with people. Find what it is that's going to help people love themselves to the point that they can respect other people and stand together as one people and simply stand up and say no. You know, it's really difficult looking at the world going in the direction that it is and seeing the beauty of the human spirit and the potential of the human spirit the way I do, and seeing how ill-prepared people are and how unwilling people are to step into their own power. It frustrates me no end, folks. It really does. You know, in all the years that I've been doing this, I can see just how simply we could change the world. The problem is, I guess, getting the message to people. How do you get the message out to people? I mean, the media obviously isn't going to do it. Perhaps they will now. Perhaps they'll start doing it. Now that they're falling apart, now that we've had people like Amy Robach spill the beans, even if she didn't mean to do it, at least it's out there now, and perhaps people will see. I mean, we've had the Australian media pushing back a little bit against government. Perhaps some people within these organizations will be prepared to step into their light at some stage and help us get this message out to people. Perhaps there are some world leaders that have some integrity somewhere. I kind of doubt that. But you never know. Perhaps there are people within the system who will step up to the plate. But ultimately, it's got to come down to us, folks. Because it doesn't matter what any politicians do. It doesn't matter what people get within the system and make any changes, whatever. If we haven't changed what's in our hearts and we continue to comply with wrong behavior, if we continue to step outside our moral compass every day, if we fail to see the soul test that we're involved in here, then nothing's going to change. That's why there's no point even creating another system. And again, I've said this so many times as well. It doesn't matter what system you create. If we haven't changed what's in ourselves, nothing's going to change. You can put any leader up there you want. You can put any rules in there you want. You can put the most benevolent people up there that you could possibly find. But if people do not change their moral compass and are not prepared to change the way they interact with the people around them, nothing is going to change. Now, it doesn't matter what system we create, if we still have this moral rationale that we have now, we're just going to end up back where we are. You know, and of course, a lot of it is due to the money system, due to the fact that we're forced to pay to be alive. That is a huge part of it. It's a huge problem in everything. But again, even that, I mean, putting so much focus on the money system the way we do, this again is simply due to us stepping outside our moral compass. I mean, I don't put a lot of value on money. I mean, I do to the point that, you know, we need it. I mean, I need it. We all need it. We've got to live. We've got to eat. And we've got to pay to be alive. And that's the way it is. But, you know, if I've got spare money to give to someone, if I can buy someone a meal or whatever, it doesn't faze me to do so. You know, I don't expect them to pay me back. I don't expect any of that sort of stuff. So, you know, a lot of it is just natural giving. You know, we're not sort of able to give anymore because we have to put an economic value on everything. You know, time is money and all of this sort of stuff. So it takes away from us our natural propensity to give. It takes away a lot of good karma from us as well. I mean, when you do things for people, good things happen to you. It's always worked for me, and I've found a wonderful way to get through life is to simply, as I keep saying, throw yourself to the wind, because when you do, you find you can ride it. And just to help people around you, you find that these people help you back. It just sort of works, you know. It's an emotional mirror. I've said so many times, life is an emotional mirror. If you can have that approach in your interactions with people, remove stake in the outcome and simply live your life in a giving nature, you'll often find that the universe will give back to you and things will just work. And I think that's how we change the world, you know. We don't need this money system. We don't need any of this system in place. We don't need any of these cities and countries and borders and boundaries and all the things we've got. We don't need any of it to be human. None of it. None of it helps the human experience. I mean, sure, with these situations we've got at the moment, with this economic system, we've got the world divided up into countries and everyone's kept in a state of fear-based mind control and perceived scarcity. So people want to go to war with each other and take over resources and all sorts of stuff because we believe we're living in this finite world when I don't think we are. I think the world is anything we want it to be. But, you know, all of this stuff exists, sure. So we need some sort of, you know, protection or military or whatever to protect us from other countries. But in a normal situation where we didn't have to pay to be alive, where we didn't have this economic system forced over us, we wouldn't need any of that. You know, if we had a situation such as what it would appear existed quite recently in the lost civilization of Tartaria, and we had free energy and all the stuff that I've been researching lately, there's no reason we would be fighting wars. There's no reason we would have this incredibly violent history that we've been given. And I don't think that this violent history that we've been given is a true history at all. I don't. I can't see any evidence to support the violent, feudal version of history that we've been given. I think most of this stuff has happened quite recently, and I would suggest that we were living in quite a peaceful world reasonably recently, and that we have an opportunity to do that again. You know, but what it's going to take is a shift of consciousness, a shift of perspective, as I keep saying. You know, ultimately, that is the only way out of this mess, folks. And that's why I've gone through some of the stuff that I've gone through today on the show, just a bit of a spiritual show today to perhaps help people do that inner work up and just suggest some possibilities of things they might want to try to do the inner work, things that have helped for me anyway, because I think that if we do this inner work, and we can bring these changes about in ourselves, we can ripple these changes out to the rest of the world. And, well, you know, it's one small thing. There's a lot of things we can do. There's a lot of steps we need to take. There's a lot of avenues we need to pursue. We need to do it from all angles, but I think this is one that is just important to look at. So it's just something that I wanted to share with you on the show today. I mean, I didn't plan on sharing this when I started. I was kind of talking about Scott Morrison, but, well, that's just where it ended up. And, well, ladies and gentlemen, we have now reached that time again where it is now the end of the show. Kind of a vast, esoteric sort of a show today. Hope it didn't go off on too many tangents, and I hope you got something from it. But it is nice to address these topics, and I think it is something that needs to be done. We really do need to get back in touch with ourselves, folks, and get back in touch with what it means to be human. Once we do that, we'll find that the remedy to this situation is really quite simple. But folks, as I said, that is it for me now. I'm going to have to leave it there. As I mentioned to you before, I'm going to be speaking at Anacapulco next year in February. If you go to my website, thecrowhouse.com, and you click the Anacapulco banner to enter the website, you'll find you get yourself a 10% discount on your ticket. Or if you want to buy a ticket, you can simply put in the coupon CROWHOUSE, and you'll get yourself a 10% discount anyway. I'm also going to be speaking at an event, I think, in April somewhere in the United States, which is called the Zen Awakening event. I will bring you more information to that when it comes to hand. And I intend to organize an event in LA as well. I'll keep you posted on that one. And I'll be doing AV11 as well, I would imagine. And that will be in the UK around about May. And they're the only events that I have planned for next year. And I do intend to wind the traveling down after next year, folks. I know I've been saying it for a while, but I actually intend to go through with that after 2020. I think the world's going to be beginning to change pretty dramatically next year anyway. I think even this year we've been saying things really get pushed down to the wire. So I think the next few years is going to be a bit of a roller coaster ride, and I'd kind of like to be home for that. So that's my intention after 2020. Thank you, as always, to the many people who send me so many kind emails. I'm attempting to get on top of the emails, so do bear with me on that. And thank you to the people who support me on Patreon as well. As I've said so often, I could not do any of this work were it not for the support that I get on Patreon. And actually, if anybody can chip in at the moment, I could really use a substantial injection of funds at the moment. I hate to put that out there, and I hate to ask, but I just really sort of find myself behind the eight ball at the moment. And if anybody can help out at all with a one-off donation or something like that, I just thought I'd put that out there and see if there's any response. I could really do with some assistance at the moment. And I kind of like to keep things the way they are. I mean, I really don't want to have to monetize my account. I mean, sometimes I wonder whether I should monetize the account, whether I should do live streams and super chats and all that sort of stuff the way other people do. But I don't know, I kind of like it this way. I kind of like leaving economics out of the equation completely and just allowing the universe to help me where it can. But I'll just put that out there now. If anybody can chip in for a one-off contribution this month, it would be a fantastic thing anyway. I mean, as I said, I'd really like to avoid monetizing the account. It's not a path that I've ever wanted to go down. But anyway, folks, I'll just put that out there and let the cards fall where they may. As always, thank you for joining me on the show today. It is a pleasure to have your company. It's always a pleasure. And I'll look forward to speaking to you again next week. Please take very good care until then. In Lakesh.